In this second podcast on the article on teaching as creative subversion, I want to pick up on where I left at the end of the first piece, which is where I was suggesting that the idea of product-orientated education has become really pervasive in contemporary formal education, whether it's in professional training, the schooling of children, adolescents, or higher education. But I want to add that even more humanistic and indeed progressive and radical models of education are still product orientated, and that this all has implications for how we understand education existing within a particular culture, and predominantly a Western culture. The point is that all of these perspectives on education include some idea about a predetermined end goal, and that the process is linear in its trajectory. Now, what I want to do is identify some of the problems with thinking about education in this way, and that there are some unintended consequences. I think several questions need to be asked about this form of education. So who defines the outcome, however benign it is, and why do they define such an outcome? To what extent does the educational process become, if you will, defined by the intended outcome? Is it possible to define an outcome that's derived from an activity that is essentially relational? Or indeed, what does it reveal about the power dynamic if it's possible for the outcome of the student to be determined by the teacher or training? Furthermore, education doesn't sit outside of socio-economic dynamics. And given the current widespread capitalist or pro-capitalist neoliberal economic culture, this, by implication, shapes the nature and direction of the educational task. In such a context, the idea of education being product-orientated becomes really problematic. For example, it's likely that education will start to parallel the alienation, objectification, and exploitation which is often associated with capitalistic practices. And it might also incorporate, you know, very laudable principles such as consumer choice, market diversity, and product delivery, with the incumbent issues of managerialism, technocracy, and the drive for efficiency. In other words, to be more direct, the education process and experience becomes in danger of paralleling the dynamic of student as consumer and education as a traded commodity. Now, to be clear, I'm not suggesting that we entirely disband product-orientated education. I mean, that's virtually impossible, and it's also undesirable. For example, qualification is an important indicator to the public of some level of quality assurance. Now, the question I'm raising here is, what kind of quality is being assured in an educational framework that is product orientated and subject to the kind of economic cultural influence that I'm going to suggest has an anti-educational tendency? Now, I'm going to look at this in even more detail now, and I'm going to focus on three themes that have been important in education and indeed in the specifics of transactional analysis theory and practice. And these three themes are growth, autonomy, and freedom. I know that they're interrelated, and I know to separate them out like this is a bit contrived. However, I'm going to consider them separately here in the paper in order to clarify some specific comments. It's perhaps already clear that in the wider context in which the economic maxim of growth is good is indisputable, the idea that it could be an educational objective might also be regarded as beyond question. I mean, who would not want growth as an outcome? Likewise, the push towards autonomy, long regarded as a key indicator of economic success, is also seen as a valid aspiration in humanistic education, for example. And it's seen in an awful lot of transactional analysis training. Who would argue against autonomy? And finally, the desire for freedom, to choose for oneself, to take one's own path and realise a personal dream, is an enduring promise in the capitalist image. These similarly show up in educational programmes and in the work of schools, offering students an escape from their past or a route out of poverty and the promise of a better place to come. It's kind of a salvation of sorts. Each of these aspirational ideas carries a potential contamination or shadow when uncritically incorporated in an approach to education or any professional development program. The problem with promoting growth, particularly personal growth, is that it can place the student at the center of the world and become an invitation for the student to consume it, to acquire it, as if it were inexhaustible. In light of so much awareness of climate collapse, pushing towards growth is at best naive and at worst irresponsible. There's a secondary concern here, which is that by individualizing growth as personal, it can generate a narcissistic mindset, which fuels a sense of entitlement and leads to a reactive attitude, which might be described almost like a driver behaviour of take it. Separating out an individual's growth from others leads to a caution about the limitation of autonomy. The atomization of the individual risks loneliness and the rise in mental health concerns, especially in the West. This can be seen, for example, with the opioid crisis in the US, which reveals the self-destructive capacity of such neoliberal principles. There must be losers if there are to be winners. Likewise, this can be reflected in the educational arena, where notions of connectedness and diversity have to be resisted, because efficiency, homogenization, and standardizing are prized very highly. By streamlining assessment and accreditation process, reducing the curriculum range, and, if you like, the deification of evidence-based practice, these are examples of how the educational realm is, if you like, encroached on in such a way as autonomy becoming highly conditional. Finally, freedom can be constricted within a product-orientated culture, either economic or educational. In such a culture, freedom validates and satisfies craving by allowing access to the widest range of options, the freedom to choose, the security of entitlement to consume. In education, freedom has a more subtle and insidious impact that's bound up in the notion of the student having to leave point A in order to attain point B. In practice, this often means students must discard something of their present in order to succeed. I'm really aware of this in my work in schools situated in impoverished areas where education is regarded as the escape route out of poverty. This often means young people leaving their area to have to find work elsewhere. I associate the role of the school here with the figure of the Pied Piper of Hamelin, in which the attractive visitor seduces children away from the town, never to be seen again, and leaving the community bereft of its young. In education, I suggest freedom is a loaded concept, often positioning the educator as the gatekeeper that governs the escape passage to personal realization, exam success, social transformation, or achieving and running the risk of ransacking the landscape out of which the student has come.